The Weils came to the United States in 1935 upon the invitation of Max Reinhardt, who had commissioned Weil to write the score for a biblical oratorio, The Eternal Road, to be produced in New York. Having long been fascinated with American music, Weil, upon arrival, fell in love with this country. He loved everything, from hot dogs to the Staten Island Ferry. Americans seem to be ashamed to appreciate things here. I'm not, he said in an interview with the New York Times, from which I like to continue to read. When I first came to the United States 11 years ago, I became rapidly convinced that the Broadway legitimate stage is to the American public what the opera and concert halls are to the European. With that thought in mind, I have repeatedly aimed my music at the Broadway stage. And today I'm convinced that the American public is ready to accept its own form of grand opera on the legitimate stage. Briefly, let me explain why. In Europe, opera houses and legitimate theaters are subsidized by the state. I was able to compose for them and be assured of a hearing of my works. By the time I was 26, I had operas in virtually every opera company in Germany. But I was playing to a limited public. My adaptation of the Threepenny Opera and its world success opened my eyes to the vast possibilities in an audience which did not seek opera as its daily fare. Weil's first musical for Broadway was Johnny Johnson. Its daring fusion of music and satiric fantasy was so completely new and apart from anything American musicals had produced up to this time that the famous lyricist Lawrence Hart is supposed to have said to Weil, "What are you trying to do? Put people like me out of business?" Apart from writing a score entirely different from a mere musical, Weil did something unheard of on Broadway, then as well as now. He orchestrated his own music, a practice he never abandoned throughout his career. The story of Johnny Johnson takes place during the First World War. Johnny Johnson is one of those wise and inspired simpletons whose gentle innocence exposes the insanity of what is going on around him. In a manner consciously reminiscent of the famous Czech novel, The Good Soldier Schweig, Johnny merely behaves like the decent fellow he is, and the contrast between his goodness and the imbecility of rampant militarism puts the reigning militarists to shame. Our next presentation is the Goddess Aria from Johnny Johnson. It is being sung by the Statue of Liberty, as she appears as a vision in the dream of the soldiers who are on the boats leaving for war and for Europe. They see the vision of the statue, and she sings to them.
Of us,
Knickerbocker Holiday united for the first time the talents of Kurt Weill and Maxwell Anderson, his close friend and neighbor. Knickerbocker Holiday concerns itself with the evils of dictatorship and the value of freedom. To express their convictions, the authors drew modern parallels with the attempts of the tyrannical Peter Stuyvesant to suppress the liberties of the people of New Amsterdam. It was Weill's intention to write the leading role of the one-legged governor Stuyvesant for a singing actor. Walter Huston, who had never done a musical before, was the author's choice for the part. Huston was living in California at the time of casting, and Weill sent him the following telegram. "What is the range of your voice?" The actor's reply came promptly, "I have no range." "Stop. Appearing tonight on Bing Crosby program, we'll sing for you." Upon hearing Huston's transcontinental radio audition that night, Weill turned to Anderson and said, "Let's write him a sentimental romantic song." Both men went to work, and the result was September Song.
Courting the girls, I played me a waiting game. If a maid refused me with tossing curls, I let the old earth take a couple of whirls. While I plied her with tears in lieu of pearls, and as time came around, she came my way. As time came around, she came. It's a long, long while from May to December, but the days grow short when you reach September, when the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame. One hasn't got time for the waiting game. All the days dwindle down to a precious few. September, November, and these few precious days spend with you. These precious days I'll spend with you. All the days dwindle down to a precious few. September, November, and these few precious days I'll spend with you. These precious days I'll spend.
Weill wrote one of his most enchanting scores for a Broadway show, One Touch of Venus. As lyricist, he had the great idea to approach Ogden Nash, who really never had done a Broadway musical before, but he agreed to write the lyrics, and from One Touch of Venus will bring you, that's him. After its opening night. We had long entertained the suspicion that American opera, in the vital contemporaneous sense of that word, would be more likely to come from our popular theater than from our august temples of operatic art. After seeing and hearing Street Scene at the Adelphi Theater, we feel that this supposition was wholly justified. This piece is idiomatic American, direct, and unacademic in its approach to the musico-dramatic problem. In fact, Street Scene is the most important step towards significantly American opera that this writer has yet encountered in the musical theory. It was interesting to observe the wording of the advance notices of the show, and then the word opera, which is still strongly suspect to the American man in the street, was carefully avoided. Street Scene was billed as a dramatic musical, a term understood and not abhorred on Broadway. So the audience came to the show as they probably would have not come if the operatic element in it had been stressed, and found themselves excited, astonished, and entertained. Opera had crept up and caught them unaware. The word opera got inextricably into the dramatic critics' reviews, for it was a play musically expressed that the work was taken, as opera always should be taken, and the sum of the two elements make opera. I would like to bring you two excerpts from Street Scene, Sam's aria and Mrs. Moran's aria.
Seems to breathe a sigh. Sometimes I hear a neighbor snoring. Sometimes I hear a baby cry. Sometimes I hear a staircase creaking. Sometimes a distant telephone.
turn to months, months turn to years. The greasy soap suds drown our wishes.
Stars. Based on Alan Paton's novel, Cry the Beloved Country, it tells the story of two fathers, one black and one white, who both lose their sons through a violent death, and who, because of their common tragedy, finally begin to understand and respect each other. From Lost in the Stars, stay well.
Grief is your gift to me. Grief.
While Lost in the Stars was still playing to capacity audiences on Broadway, Wilde unexpectedly died at the age of 50. He never heard any of his German works performed in this country, except the one opera that Mr. Yiannopoulos did with the Met. However, later on, his German melodies came to us through the recordings of La Delenia, as you all know, and she doesn't like to be praised in public, so we'll just dedicate our finale to her, that's all.
A body just oozing life. Someone sneaking round the corner. Is that someone? Mac the Knife, Suki Tawdry, Jenny Diver, Miss Lottie Lania, Sweet Lucy Brown. Oh, the line forms on the right.
Alles unter einen Hut. Ist das nötige Geld vorhanden? Ist das Ende meistens gut? Now I translate. Happy ending, nice and tidy. It's a rule I learned in school. Get your money every Friday. Happy endings are the rule.
Just speak a few words. I'm a very bad speaker and a very bad singer too, it seems. So anyway, I would love very much to thank the Curtis Institute for making it possible an evening like that. And I think Kurt Weill, who loved students, who wrote Down in the Valley for students And I never forget that wonderful, happy evening when Down in the Valley was produced for the first time in Bloomington, in Indiana, at the university, sung by students, orchestra played by students, director a student, the lighting man a student, costumes a student, and it was one of the most unforgettable evening in his life. That's what he loved, and he loved young people. And once he said, I don't give a damn for posterity as long I want my music to be heard while I'm still alive. And that's, I think, he was very fortunate because he heard his music while he was still alive, sung by young people like this people. And I hope that we'll go on singing his music and loving it as I do tonight. And now I would like to thank the Curtis Institute for making this possible this evening, and Dino Tonopoulos and Mr. Serkin, who was unfortunately unable to come here. And also I would like you to join me to applaud a very wonderful woman who has for many, many years worked religiously and indefatigably to promote Kurt Weill's music. And this very great lady is Miss Simonette at the piano.